We are 3 weeks and 3 days away from the start of the 2014 NFL season, but there's a lot that has to happen over the next 3 weeks. A couple more weeks of preseason games that count a little bit more than that week four preseason finale, which is just kind of, mostly an effort to figure out who is going to make it onto the roster and who isn't. We won't see much of the starters week four. We didn't see plenty of starters week one. The question remains in Cleveland, who will be the starting quarterback come week one of the regular season. And if you watched Saturday night's game between the Lions and the Browns, you saw Johnny Football's first foray into NFL action. And he's not going to last a long time if he continues to dive head first when he runs the ball, or when he doesn't, but can't imagine any reason why he'd dive head first if he didn't have the ball. Twice he went head first. Once he went into a trio of Lions defenders who all hit him pretty much simultaneously. He got banged around on an incomplete pass. He was getting some attention from the trainers. He came back out onto the field, had a 16-yard scramble, a nice 14-yard pass, a sprint to the sidelines on fourth and short, and it was an exciting drive until Deion Lewis fumbled the ball after that fourth down conversion. I just can't see Manziel continuing to get up if he gets hit like that. Let's assume he's the week one starter at Pittsburgh. Yes, at Pittsburgh. And Dick LeBeau, the defensive coordinator of the Steelers, has already said he's expecting to see Manziel, and for good reason. Manziel's going to get the job. It would be a shock at this point if Manziel isn't the starter come week one. Manziel is going to have to protect himself better than he protected himself on Saturday night, because it is just a matter of time. Remember, we had that feeling 2 years ago with RG3. Just a matter of time until an injury knocks him out of the game. For RG3, it was a concussion against the Falcons, I believe, in 2012. And then it was that knee injury against the Ravens, where the knee went in a direction that knees aren't supposed to go. I still suspect he tore the ACL then, and he was trying to pull Dennis Dixon and play on it in the postseason, in part because he doesn't want to give Kirk Cousins an opportunity to usurp his job. But that's a different story for a different time and a different place, although I still keep talking about it. Bottom line, what was I talking about? Johnny Manziel, just a matter of time before Manziel is the starter. You can feel it moving in that direction. You can feel that this competition isn't really a competition. And as Dante Whitner explained it to Peter King, and Whitner's a Cleveland native who's with the Browns after playing for the Bills and the 49ers, he says that the locker room is 50-50 between Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel, but they know that either guy can play. So you don't get the impression there's going to be a problem if one guy or the other ends up getting the job. But the problem is, if Hoyer gets the job and doesn't play well, it's easy to give in to that half of the locker room that may grow and decide, let's go with Manziel, because it's assumed at some point Manziel is going to play. If you start Manziel, hard to bench him if Hoyer ends up gathering more support in the locker room. And you've got veterans who don't care about the future. For the veterans, the future is now. We want to play now. We want to win now. We want the best guys on the field, and that's part of the minefield through which Coach Mike Pettine needs to tread. Ultimately, though, the guy who signs the checks and fires the coaches, he wants Manziel. They'll never admit it, but Jimmy Haslam wants Johnny Manziel, and for that reason, ultimately, we're going to see Johnny Manziel come week one, not standing on the sidelines, although he may be standing or sitting or laying down on the sidelines after he gets banged around by some of those Steelers linebackers. Now, there's a concern that because of what happened last preseason to Jets quarterback, formerly Mark Sanchez, where he got banged up in that Giants game, that maybe Mike Vick will get hurt, especially if Coach Rex Ryan allows him to run the ball and cut back in bounds instead of going out of bounds and basically doing the things Mike Vick has done since 2001. Now there's increased chatter that Vic will be used this year in a Wildcat package. And yes, we thought the Wildcat was dead. And who knows whether it would be a traditional Wildcat or just Mike Vic getting some reps in game action with the starting offense. The Jets resolving the non-competition competition between Geno Smith and Mike Vic by letting both guys play. And this is the big reason the Jets were attracted to Tim Tebow 2 years ago. They would prefer to have two quarterbacks diluting the preparation time for each defensive team that they're going to face, because you only have so many snaps in a week to prepare, only so many practices, only so many hours, only so much time to get your guys ready to face a quarterback. So if you force those guys to get ready to face two quarterbacks, there's a chance they're going to be underprepared for both and maybe woefully unprepared for one of them. And I suspect that the Jets would have preferred to keep that under wraps so that they could roll it out week one or week two or whenever they choose to roll it out. But you know what? Mike Vick, he's not bashful about saying what he thinks and what he believes. And Vick's the one who let this cat out of the bag after the preseason opener against the Colts. Vick's the one who talked about the coaches using him in a change of pace role, even though Vick knows it's disruptive to the starting offense because Vick was the source of that disruption 5 years ago in Philadelphia. Remember that preseason game where Donovan McNabb came to the sidelines? Vick went in. McNabb eventually displayed frustration. He did the kill sign, like, let's move on. I don't want to do this. They did it for a year until they moved on from McNabb. And that could be the role that Vick has, at least for now. And what it also does, Vick is ready to go if Geno Smith gets injured or if they decide to yank Geno Smith. Vick is getting reps. Vick is ready to go. And Vick could outplay. I mean, this may be a competition that doesn't happen in training camp. This may be a competition that happens during the regular season. And the better Vick plays, the more he plays. And the worse Geno Smith plays, the less he plays. And it could be something that's determined week to week, game to game, drive to drive, snap to snap. But we'll see how that plays out. Now, the Houston Texans would probably be happy to have either Geno Smith or Mike Vick at quarterback based on what we saw or didn't see on Saturday night. 32-0 loss to the Arizona Cardinals. And, yes, preseason doesn't mean anything, but 32-0 is still 32-0 for the first game of the Bill O'Brien era, prompting him to say that the team's performance was terrible. And that's probably an overstatement. Now, he had a chance to sleep on it, and he met with the media on Sunday, and he talked about some of the positives from the game, but none of the quarterbacks were mentioned among the positives, and he didn't close the door on tweaking the quarterback rotation. You have to assume they haven't closed the door on letting other quarterbacks walk through the door because the guys they have, not very good. And ultimately, we have to take a look at who put this team together. When the Texans had a horrible season last year, 2 straight wins to start the year, 14 straight losses to end it, Rick Smith, the general manager, the guy who put this team together, was never regarded as seriously being on the hot seat. At some point, if this continues, you have to assume Rick Smith is going to be in trouble. And I recall back after the 2005 season when the Texans were making progress, and it all fell apart. Dom Capers, the head coach, got run out the door right after the season ended. And the owner, Bob McNair, was concerned about firing Charlie Casserly, the GM, as I heard it at the time. Could be incorrect, but I've never heard anything to the contrary except from Charlie Casserly, that McNair decided not to fire both guys right away because it would ultimately look bad on McNair for hiring both guys if you fire both guys. So the draft came and went, and Casserly resigned, although what we heard out of Texans camp at the time was that Casserly really didn't have much say over that draft in 2006. Again, could be wrong, and Casserly would say otherwise. But the point is, did the Texans deliberately hang on to Rick Smith because Bob McNair didn't want to admit that he had concocted a front office and coaching staff that was so bad he needed to throw the whole thing out in one fell swoop? And will Rick Smith be on the hot seat? How can he not be on the hot seat if the team is horrible again? Who's picking the players? Who's selecting the quarterbacks? And I know Bill O'Brien's got some say now. And this is where Bill O'Brien is in a bit of a tough spot, because O'Brien comes from the Bill Belichick school. O'Brien would probably love to have the power that Bill Belichick has. So, you know, if the team stinks, it's the talent. If the team thrives, it's the coach. And if the team thrives, maybe the coach can get more power over personnel. If the team's horrible, it's not the coach's fault. The GM goes, and maybe he's replaced by somebody who has less power than Smith, and O'Brien comes out of it with more. A delicate dance that happens in any city where the head coach and the GM are not completely and fully joined at the hip. This is the kind of stuff that you can see happen, and this is going to be one of the issues to keep an eye on in Houston this year, because O'Brien is coaching the guys that Rick Smith have put together, and, you know, maybe the team just isn't all that good. When we return, speaking of teams that aren't all that good, the Miami Dolphins. They may be better this year, though. Let's not completely write them off, even though we did in the PFT Power Rankings of putting them at number 31. Armando Salguero, the Miami Herald, getting us up to date on the Miami Dolphins, and then we'll get up to date on your questions. Twitter, phone calls, etc. We'll do that to end the show as we always do. Before that, we'll visit with our good buddy Armando Salguero. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Lots of optimism this year for the Miami Dolphins and pretty much every other team that's currently 0-0 except the Oakland Raiders, although plenty of Raiders fans are optimistic. Plenty of Dolphins fans very optimistic about building on last year's 8-8 finish, even though they were 8-6, had a couple of winnable games, could have gotten to the playoffs, lost both, and here we are talking about another non-playoff Dolphins team trying to get back to the postseason. joining us to break it all down, Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. And Armando, let's start with a suggestion you made recently that has gotten us both criticized for merely trolling for clicks. The idea that with Matt Moore, backup quarterback injured, and other quarterback issues and quarterback needs, why not bring in the guy who launched Tebow Mania at Sun Life Stadium nearly 3 years ago with that thrilling comeback down 15-0 with 5:23 remaining in the game? Why do you believe that Tebow should get a shot to join the Dolphins quarterback depth chart?
Because he's no worse than any of the players that they've got at number three or number four taking snaps right now, Pat Devlin, Seth Lobato, because the players that they brought in today, Rex Grossman, John Skelton, Brady Quinn, they're no better than Tim Tebow. In fact, I could argue that they're not as good as Tim Tebow. And I know everybody's going to say, well, Tim Tebow has had his time. He's had his chance. He's proven that he can't be an NFL quarterback. Well, really? He went to camp with the New England Patriots. They know a thing or two about bringing players to camp. Obviously, he didn't make it there, but he did, in fact, go and help the Denver Broncos make the playoffs. Tim Tebow is 7-4, or was 7-4 as a starter for the Denver Broncos. And I'm looking at the quarterback ratings and what he's done when he's actually been on the field. No, he's not a high percentage passer, but you know what? He's thrown 17 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and a 75 career quarterback rating. That's better than Brady Quinn. That's better than John Skelton. And yeah, that's better than Rex Grossman.
And that's a pretty good argument, but what about the reality that Tebow does his best work in crunch time of a game, typically the fourth quarter, sometimes overtime like he did in the postseason against the Steelers, but that before you get to the fourth quarter of a close game, you have to get through a lot of bad football from Tim Tebow, including the first three quarters of the game and also pretty much every practice and preseason performance. Is that basically the bottom line, that teams aren't willing to embrace a guy who only does his best work in the fourth quarter of a close game and can't do anything for you in practice?
Mike, I'm not saying sign Tim Tebow and make him your starter, but we're talking about comparing him to John Skelton. We're talking about comparing him to Rex Grossman or Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn was Tim Tebow's backup in Denver. Brady Quinn hasn't thrown a pass since 2012. Neither has Skelton. Rex Grossman hasn't thrown a pass since 2011. So I'm not saying the Dolphins should bring in Tim Tebow and make Tim Tebow their starter, by golly, because he lights up the fans and is a circus, and I need a circus to gain clicks. That's not what I'm saying. Give the guy a workout. What do you have to lose?
Well, and aren't we talking, though, about camp arms and guys who can come in and deliver the football to the receivers who are vying for jobs? And if Tebow in practice is either going to throw bounce passes or put it 10 yards over the guy's head, there's no reason bringing him in to be a camp arm, because he's not suited to be a camp arm because he's horribly inaccurate in practice settings. Isn't that why the Dolphins are staying away from someone like Tebow?
Well, if that's their thinking, you know what? That's fine. I can accept that, except you don't know for sure, not you being the Dolphins. You don't know for sure because you didn't work him out. So you're telling me he can't be a camp arm based on what you've heard, because you didn't work him out. You haven't seen him in camp. You haven't worked him out. Your eyes haven't told you anything. You're going on reputation.
And isn't this a situation, Armando, where Tim Tebow's reputation, where his following, where the Tebow maniacs actually hurt him? Because you can't flirt with Tim Tebow. You better be ready to marry Tim Tebow. You can't bring him in and then welcome. And I know at some point in the last year, the word distraction has become taboo, but you're welcoming a distraction that you just don't need for a guy who's going to be fourth at best on your depth chart.
Ding, 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 ding. That's it, Florio. I think we have struck the nerve here. Tim Tebow is a distraction. You know, he's got his Tebow files, or the Tebowites, or whatever, Tebow Nation, and they want Tim Tebow, if he's on a team, to get the ball and be the guy. And I think that most teams, in fact, all 32 teams have said thanks, but no thanks. They don't want to deal with any of that. Don't want to deal with the combination of that circus, quote-unquote, plus the fact that Tim Tebow is a marginal player.
Shouldn't he go to, if he really wants to keep playing football, shouldn't he go to Canada and see what he can do there if he still thinks he's good enough to play in the NFL?
I believe that's what route I would take if I were him. I'm not him. But he obviously is believing for a big, you know, a big moment and a big chance where he can, you know, sort of light it up. I don't know if that moment or chance is going to come or not. It's, you know, I know that he's a praying man. I know that it's going to take a lot of prayer to get to that moment.
Well, the moment has arrived for starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill, year three. New offense for the first time since he arrived in the NFL, and really for the first time since he started playing quarterback because of the Mike Sherman connection between Texas A&M and the Miami Dolphins the last 2 years. Are the Dolphins sold on Tannehill, or does he need to really prove it this year? Because they've got that date coming up next May to pick up the fifth-year option, which will be $15 million plus. Will they be sold on Ryan Tannehill? Are they already sold on Ryan Tannehill?
Today, the Dolphins are not sold on Ryan Tannehill. You know, Coach Joe Philbin is very careful when he discusses Tannehill to say he's an improving player, and then he outlines the things that he wants improvement from Tannehill on. And then he's always invariably ends it with, we're expecting great things, but never guarantees that those things will be coming. So they want him to be good. They hope that he's good, but they can't guarantee you that he's good because he hasn't been really good yet. He's still, you know, a work in progress. And when you're talking about a player that basically they redid his footwork this year, you know, it's not like he's a ready-made product to begin with. He's learning a new offense. He's working with a new coordinator, and he's got a new throwing motion. So that, we don't know what Ryan Tannehill is going to be this year. It looks good to this point, but obviously preseason I don't think is the greatest measure of a quarterback.
And you talk about changing mechanics, changing throwing motion. When we talk about that with quarterbacks not named Tim Tebow, we just assume that, yeah, that can work. But I remember all the scrutiny of Tebow, and it proved to be correct, that you can practice all the different movements of the arm and all the different mechanics, but when it's time to go play in a game with live reps and you're processing a bunch of information, you slide back to your muscle memory and these changes don't take. Is there any reason to believe the changes are going to take for Tannehill once it's time to go out and try to figure out how to run a new offense?
Yeah, I think it wouldn't be fair to compare what they're asking Ryan to do with what Tim Tebow was asked to do coming out of college, because Tim had to basically, his entire motion and his footwork were things that he had to throw out and start anew with. With Tannehill, I would say it's more tweaks than a total revamp. It's not like he's, you know, starting the ball from his hip and throwing it. It's not like he's got his right foot in front of his left foot when he's throwing for a right-handed passer. That's not it. So it's more tweaks for Ryan Tannehill than it is an overall reconstruction.
What do we expect from receiver Mike Wallace, who got a ton of money last year, had a disappointing first season, frustrated at times, he wasn't getting the ball more. What do we expect from Wallace in the new offense?
Well, they are going to use him, I think, better, more wisely, in that last year, and I don't believe that I'm about to say this about an NFL offense, but it is true. Last year, the Dolphins lined up Mike Wallace on the right side 90% of the time, and that's the way that it was. There was very little motion. There was no imagination to the usage of Mike Wallace. And so he was basically a one-trick pony. Go deep. If you can catch it, hooray for us. And if you can't, we'll keep trying. And unfortunately, Wallace and Ryan Tannehill did not have the kind of chemistry that turned into any sort of major points. This year, they're going to move him around. There's going to be a lot of bubble screens. You know, they'll line him up in the slot at times. You won't know where Mike Wallace is going to be, you know, prior to every single snap, indeed prior to the moment that they break the huddle. They're gonna try to make him a more dynamic weapon.
How concerned should fans be that maybe they'll try to force the ball to him a little bit too much?
I don't think that's a concern because Ryan Tannehill has very good chemistry with Brandon Gibson in the slot. He's got very good chemistry with Brian Hartline. In fact, Hartline has 2,000-yard seasons to his credit back-to-back. So Tannehill likes to throw the ball to a lot of different people. And by the way, don't forget Charles Clay, who last year had something of a breakout season at tight end. He caught over 70 passes. So they're going to throw the ball. They're going to distribute it fairly evenly. I don't think that it's going to be Tannehill locking on to Wallace all the time at all.
Now, on the offensive line, definitely a work in progress, definitely an effort to reduce the sack total from 58 last year. Mike Pouncey at center. What's the current expectation as to when he's going to be back after having hip surgery in the offseason?
Yeah, he's ahead of schedule now. And, you know, the Dolphins were planning for as much as a 7-game absence from Pouncey. Now it's looking like it's going to be a little bit less, maybe just the first month, maybe the first 3 games. That is all dependent on how well he can, you know, we've got a month out before they've got to make a decision on whether to put him on PUP or not. And in that month, he can continue to, you know, make up time, or he can have a setback. So at this point, it's looking good, but I doubt very seriously. In fact, I can almost guarantee you he will not play against the New England Patriots in the season opener.
There's a lawsuit that's been filed in the wake of the Pouncey twins' birthday party, Marquise Pouncey and Mike Pouncey accused of assault. And there was a report over the weekend, actually on Friday, that Marquise faces criminal charges, Mike doesn't. But even without criminal charges, is there a concern within the organization that this incident, coupled with the bullying scandal from last year, becomes that repeat offense situation that possibly gets the NFL's attention and could set Mike Pouncey up for some sort of disciplinary action?
That's very interesting. And the Dolphins, if they have that concern, and no one's really voiced that concern to me, they don't have to really face that concern for another 2 years. I mean, they obviously did the smart extension, the no-thought extension, basically, that all 2011 high first-round picks got. And so they did that for Pouncey. So he's tied up through 2015. They don't have to worry about paying him and risking that money this year, like originally Pouncey wanted, by the way, and maybe not next year either.
And long term, do you see Pouncey being a member of the organization, or is it too soon to tell?
You know what? It's time for him to grow up, because I get it that he's not a bad guy, and he's not, Mike. He's not a bad guy. But at some point, every time you go to the Cameo Club or whatever it is here on Miami Beach, this time it was a fracas with your brother and some other people. The time before that, it was the free Aaron Hernandez caps. At what point do you say, hey, every time I go to this place, I get into some sort of problems. I'm going to stop doing these things and maybe, you know, chill out a little bit and grow up and mature and not do dumb things. At some point, 25-year-old Mike Pouncey has to become an adult.
Yeah, it'll be an intriguing question next summer whether the Pounceys end up back at the Cameo Nightclub for their next joint birthday party after the last couple of years of misadventures. Some misadventures on the defensive side of the ball. Two contributors now, one starter, Rashad Jones, safety, and Deion Jordan, part of the, hopefully, defensive end pass rush rotation, gone for the first 4 games due to PED use. Do the Dolphins have a problem here, or are these isolated incidents?
Well, they have a problem in that they're losing a lot of talent. The Dolphins don't think that they have a team-wide, you know, problem in that guys are juicing up to get ready for the season. They don't think that. But they clearly have a problem in personnel as to what these suspensions are gonna bring. The Rashad Jones suspension hurts, and it hurts a lot because it not only causes you to lose your starting safety, who started 46 games for you, but now the guy that has to replace him, it was the starting nickel, who had 600 snaps at nickel last year, Jimmy Wilson. So basically, you're going against the New England Patriots in the season opener with your second-best safety back there, because it's not Rashad Jones, and your second best nickel back there, because it's not Jimmy Wilson, and you're facing Tom Brady. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, here's the last one for you. I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball. Next year, January, February time frame, Tim Tebow, still not a member of the Miami Dolphins. We'll give you that one.
You are absolutely correct. I thought you were going to ask me about Joe Philbin.
I am.
Being the head
that
coach.
Was the setup. No. The setup was Tim Tebow, not a member of the team. That's the gimme putt. Here's the 30-footer. Actually, first a 15-footer, then the 40-footer. Will Philbin still be the head coach? And if not, will Jim Harbaugh be the head coach of the Dolphins?
Well, again, this is going to be interesting in that Philbin has to win. He has to be 9-7 or better to keep his job. Do I believe this is a 9-7 or better team? No, I don't. I think they're a 7-9, 8-8 at best team. And that was before Rashad Jones was out for four games and Deion Jordan was out for four games. So I don't know that that's going to happen. And if that's what owner Steve Ross uses to determine whether he keeps his coach or not, I would say to you, he's going to go coach hunting. And as to whether it's going to be Jim Harbaugh, I'll go back to history. Steve Ross hasn't closed on very many people that he wanted during his time here. He didn't close on Harbaugh the first time. Last year, at the end of the day, the general manager search, they picked Dennis Hickey, who was like their fourth guy. They didn't close on their first two or three candidates. So Steve Ross, a real estate magnate, not good closing in my estimation. So Jim Harbaugh, not the coach of the Miami Dolphins.
Well, but at some point, though, Steve Ross is going to figure out the way to close these deals is to cough up the coin. There's a certain amount of money out there that gets the deal done. Hopefully, if he makes another run at Harbaugh this time, though, he'll fire the head coach before he flies to California to take a meeting. Great stuff as always. Appreciate you giving us some time. We'll be keeping track of your work at the Miami Herald website, and we'll monitor the Dolphins transaction report to see if and when they sign Tim Tebow. Thanks, buddy.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot.
All right, there he is, Armando Salguero. Great stuff, great insight on the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, even though they've struggled for years now, we kind of get ingrained in our head the good teams from when we're kids, and for people who grew up in the 70s, it's still hard to set aside the idea that the Dolphins are a good team. They are a good team, but right now they're not. But over time they have been, and they're desperately trying to get back to it, and we'll see if they can get back to it this year. When we come back, we're going to get back to you and your questions via Twitter, cell phone device, or otherwise. Pick it up now, 888-237-5269. That's the number to call if you want to ask me a question after the break. We will be right back. This is PFT Live. PFT Planet Time. Let's get to it. Usually I just prattle around here for about 30 seconds like I am right now. Let's go straight to the Twitter questions. At Clemson Polk. Can Miami, New York Jets, and Buffalo make the AFC East a competitive division this year with New England? Can they? Yes. Will they? Yeah, probably not. Miami 8-8 last year, overachieved. Jets 8-8 last year. I thought they'd be better, but they've got the cornerbacks dropping like the proverbial flies. They've got still an unsettled quarterback situation that could create problems. I think the offense will be better. I don't know that the defense is going to be where it was last year. I think the Jets can make it a little more competitive. They still have a four-game gap to make up. And then there's the Bills. A lot of pressure on that team. Otherwise, you know, they don't get to the playoffs this year. Everybody's going to get fired by the new owner unless the new owner just happens to have Doug Marrone and Doug Whaley at the top of the wish list for coach and GM coming through the door. I think it's still the Patriots' division, and the Patriots' challenge is to fatten up their record to the point where if they play Denver in the postseason, Denver has to come to them. That's the key. Where will the rematch be? The rematch that feels inevitable in the AFC Championship game. Will it be in Denver? Will it be in New England? The Patriots need to win enough games to engineer that NFC or AFC title, AFC title game in New England. Next up, Twitter question from a regular Twitter question asker at Red Zone Alk. Just how good were the Cardinals against what is thought to be a very good Houston defense? So, you know, it's hard to read much into preseason at all. And I know the Cardinals won that game 32-0, and I know the Cardinals' starting offense looked good, but there's no game planning. This is just trying to get the Romeo Crennel version of the 3-4, which is very different from the Wade Phillips version of the 3-4, up to speed, up to snuff, a lot of moving parts, a lot of work in progress, and I don't read much into either the Houston defense or the Cardinals offense as a result of it. It because you don't have a flow of the game. You don't have halftime adjustments. You don't have opportunities to learn from drive to drive what a team is doing and then how to counter it. That's one of the reasons why preseason really is just glorified practice, because we don't have that same chess match that you see in a real game where there's something happening. There's a way they're blocking. There's a way they're attacking. There's a way that the receivers are running their routes, and that information gets processed in real time on the sidelines with the Polaroids or the tablets or whatever they use. They get together. They have their meetings. They figure out how they're going to adjust, and both sides are doing that as the game unfolds, and that ultimately determines the outcome of the game in plenty of cases, especially where the talent is stacked together like it is now. So that's one of the realities that just isn't part of the reality of the preseason. Our next reality is a question from at Dwayne Fannin. How do you think the Panthers' offense is shaping up? Receivers, tight ends, offensive line. Well, the issue here is Cam Newton, the quarterback, who has been cleared to play on Sunday night, even though he has said he can't stress he's not 100%. He said last week he still feels a thump in his surgically repaired ankle. And in an era where every surgery is declared a success, every rehab is ahead of schedule, something hasn't gone right with Cam Newton's ankle. And I know we're so worried about Tony Romo's back, we need to be worried about Cam Newton's ankle. We'll see him Sunday night. He has been cleared to play. That'll give us a better look at what the Panthers have going on. A lot of hype for Kelvin Benjamin, who looked very good in the preseason opener. So if he stays healthy, and if he can translate that to week one when it counts, when he's got a defensive back, NFL-quality defensive back across the line from him trying to redirect him and disrupt his pass route, and can he get open? Can he make the catch? Can Cam Newton throw the ball with confidence? Is the blocking going to hold up with the changes at tackle? Then maybe the Panthers can get it done, but we'll see. That's all to be determined, especially once Cam Newton plays. He hasn't played yet. One more question. We got to wrap it up early today because I got to be somewhere in a little bit, so we're going to keep it short. And thanks for the calls, by the way. What are you doing on Monday? Working? Hopefully you work one of the days of the week so you don't get fired. See, Crawl always working on giving us some good questions. How long do you think this emphasis on holding will last in the regular season? Football games are coming to a slow drag. Look, the numbers from the Hall of Fame game Thursday night and Friday preseason games were staggering. When you take, it was an average of 5 defensive holding or illegal contact calls per game. You project that over 256 game season. That's a lot of flags, especially when the last time illegal contact and defensive holding was made a point of emphasis, which is a fancy way of saying, you know what, we're not enforcing these rules as written. We better get our act together. It went from 79 to 191. Combined defensive holding and illegal contact fouls. They're on pace to have over 1,000 based on the preseason through Friday night. I haven't gone through the play-by-play and totaled up and identified the illegal contact and defensive holding fouls from Saturday. That's on my list of things to do, and hopefully I'll get to it. But the NFL believes that the players will adjust. Well, last time around, they didn't adjust. This time around, they need to adjust, and that's really going to be the question once the regular season starts. Will the games get bogged down by all the flags that the officials are going to throw, by calling the fouls as they're required to be called, or will the players adjust and not do the thing that's going to get them flagged? We may have to go through a couple of weeks of slow games and a lot of flags to get to the point where the players realize, okay, they really do mean this. But there's a chance this back and forth, this tug of war goes on and on throughout the season, because it could be every week that teams think, okay, this is the week they're not going to call it quite as tightly, and they'll keep calling it just as tightly as they plan to. We'll see. A necessary wrinkle for the regular season that could make the games a little less intriguing if the laundry is flying as often as it has been so far in the preseason. Another episode of PFT Live comes flying at you tomorrow at noon Eastern time. Later this week, we're going to have Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals, tentatively. Later this week, we will have Mike Dempsey, who covers the Jaguars for 1010XL. I still feel like something's happening with this Blake Bortles thing. I know the Jaguars are doing everything they can to make us think he's not going to play. I don't buy it. I think we're going to talk to Dempsey tomorrow about that. And tonight, PFT on NBCSN. Half hour only because of the whole Tony Stewart thing. NASCAR America has expanded to an hour. They'll be on 5 to 6. We'll be on 6 to 6:30. We'll pack in as much as we can in that 30 minutes. Hines Ward, Ross Tucker in studio with Dave Briggs. I'll be right here. Check us out 6 o'clock Eastern tonight. See you back here again tomorrow. Have a good one.